This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
I still struggle, and I've been writing about compliance for 20 years. I still struggle with how we even define risk assessments because they can be such a broad scope of stuff you must assess. Is this an external risk that is affecting your company that you want to assess? Is it the internal controls you have that you want to assess how well they are working to prevent the risk? Is it both?
That was Matt Kelly. This is Tom Fox. Welcome to the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds. So we take a deep dive into the world of risk assessment, how you should think through a risk assessment, the different strategies you can use, and some of the tactical considerations you need to make before starting your risk assessment. It's a deep dive into a topic that many compliance professionals still struggle with. We also talk about our experiences due in the total eclipse that happened in the United States on April 8th. First, we're going to have a word from our sponsor, Ethoco.
And accessibility is a daunting task. Ethoco makes it effortless with real-time permissions control. This feature ensures that sensitive information is both secure and accessible while balancing confidentiality with efficiency. It's about creating a fortress around your data while keeping the gates flexible for those who need access. Discover a solution where security meets agility. Step into a world of controlled freedom with Ethoco. Learn about reshaping your data security at ethoco.com/CPN. Book a demo, download our white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and try our free ROI calculator to start a new chapter in ethics and compliance management.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back again with Matt Kelly for the award-winning Compliance Into the Weeds. Welcome back, Matt.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here.
Matt, you wrote a really interesting blog post, I believe this week, on risk assessments. What led to the blog post? And tell us about it.
Well, I mean, the proximate cause of this was simply that we had a webinar I moderated the other week on compliance and risk assessments. It was one of the EthicsVerse webinars that I host from time to time. But I really liked the subject matter because I still struggle, and I've been writing about compliance for 20 years. I still struggle with how we even define risk assessments because they can be such a broad scope of stuff you must assess. Is this an external risk that is affecting your company that you want to assess? Is it the internal controls you have that you want to assess how well they are working to prevent the risk? Is it both? And then increasingly, and Tom, you know this, we've talked about it before on this podcast, regulators don't just want to see that you have done a risk assessment, but that the company has some sort of disciplined process to oversee a dozen different risk assessments that you are doing on a dozen different things. And it's not even you, the compliance officer, it is you, the company. And maybe different parts of the enterprise are doing different sorts of risk assessments that you'd want to keep in some sort of coherent, disciplined fashion. So how do you do all of that? It was a very good webinar. We had a lot of discussion. But still, even then, even today, in the modern times, we still had a lot of questions about how a risk assessment should actually work. This is not an easy subject to master.
So I was really interested with the data versus people dichotomy. Mm-hmm. What were your maybe the background of that and how you finally shook out on your thoughts?
Well, I mean, the background was that I simply asked the several speakers on the webinar, how would you even get started for something that could be such a elastic definition of what are you trying to assess? Who do you actually go talk to? What do you look at? And there were these rival schools of thought, we'll put it that way. You could, as the compliance officer, go and talk to different people first. What is this risk, in your opinion? What do you think the big threats to the company are? How would this compliance risk actually happen at our company? How serious do you think it is? You could talk to the people. Or you could go and look at the data. how well are we managing against, say, privacy breaches? How well are we performing due diligence on third parties? Or how well are we getting documentation for resellers asking for subscription or discounts for the services they sell to government customers? Which, of course, it's never a discount. It's always a bribe. But do you look to the people first and get a sense of that at a more abstract, qualitative level? Or do you look at the data first? And do you get a more quantitative sense of the risk? And we had some different opinions about which was better, which was worse. And we can talk about each of them in turn, but I'm still not sure exactly where I come down on this. I think it is a very circumstance-specific decision a compliance officer would have to make. And both have their pros and both have their cons.
Let's start with the people. What are the pros and cons?
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot to be said for talking with people first, is that you get to go, you, the compliance officer, go to the lines of business to ask them about the risk. And you're going with a blank slate. And it does give you the opportunity to frame the conversation in a more alliance sort of a way. We have this risk. We are trying to govern as a company. You're the one who encounters it a lot. I'm the one trying to prevent the risk and reduce it. So how do you think this works? And, you know, I think that compliance is still very much a people business. So certainly talking with the people first and forging those alliances or attempting to, that's good in the long-term strategy of making them like the compliance function. On the other hand, they might be lying to you. They might not know what they're talking about. They still might not want to talk to you. And you might not know exactly what you should be asking. So there is, on the other hand, you could look at the data first and you could get a better sense from the data of, here's what I think this risk actually looks like. And then you can go back to the people and, you know, data first, people second, and you can sit with the people to say, well, the data says this. What do you think? Or the data raises these concerns with me. What's your response? So you could ask more informed and directed questions to the people if you've studied the data first. On the other hand, that might lead to a more, I'll say, adversarial relationship. Maybe some business unit leaders might feel a bit put off or put on the back foot because you're coming at them with data. And again, to be fair, maybe you don't know how to interpret the data. Maybe it is giving you one sense of things, but you don't have the full context. You're trying to get that full context from the business function leaders, but they might not necessarily see it that way. They might see that you are trying to call them out, that something is wrong. And that gets away from the adversarial stuff that are the alliance building stuff, I mean, that we just talked about a few minutes ago. So you have to juggle these competing variables. And then, Tom, to make it even more complex, all of this also depends on you having full access to the data so that you can either talk to the people and then get data later to support or contradict what they said, or you can look at the data first, but you need the full access to the data so you can reach the best sort of grounding and education possible. And if you don't have full access to the data, then I'm not sure it matters whether you talk to people first or look at the data first. Because if you don't have full access to the data, you're never going to be able to get the corroborating evidence or context that you need.
Matt, you also had further points around the maturity of the compliance program, how long the compliance officer had been in place. Why don't you speak about those variables as well?
Sure. I think this was something that a listener brought up, which is a really good point, is that if you are fairly new to either the compliance officer role at your company or you're fairly new to the company, period, then you might want to start with the people first because it is an opportunity to introduce yourself to the business function and show them you are not here to catch them. You are not here to call them out. You're not here to be the bad guy. So there's a lot of wisdom in taking the people first approach if you are new. On the other hand, if you are a veteran at your organization and you have done compliance risk assessments before, they already know who you are and that you are not the bad guy, then it may make sense to look at the data first, because you aren't necessarily going to stumble into that adversarial prosecutorial role just because you've looked at the data and you know what the real issues are. If you have more of a finesse because you've been doing this for a long time and they know you're not the enemy, then you can look at the data first and ask better, more precise questions when you finally get to the people. And that's not going to lead to the adversarial tensions that I've been talking about. I thought that was an excellent observation.
Matt, I didn't see this specifically addressed in your blog post, but were there any either thoughts or discussions around bringing in a third party to do the risk assessment itself?
We kind of sort of touched on that. It depends on how much you view, say, usually the internal audit function as an independent outside resource. Now, they're really not outside because they are on the paid employee of the company. On the other hand, they are as independent and outsider-ish as you're going to get at a large company. But you could have the internal audit team do a compliance risk assessment for you. There are some very good reasons why you might not want to do that. Or you could have internal audit help you in some sort of way with specific risk assessment tasks, and we can get into some of what that is. On the other hand, I think also you could look at an outside compliance advisory firm to help you with a compliance risk assessment. There's no shortage of them who would be happy to talk about how they could help you for some reasonable fee, I am sure. But that would also depend on, do you have enough resources as a compliance function to do a risk assessment yourself? Maybe you don't. And maybe then you could have an outside firm assist you in that. Do you have enough budget? And do you have enough support from the board and the CFO to actually go ahead and hire them? Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But in the abstract, are there outside firms who could do this for you if you needed the help? Absolutely, there are. And I won't list them here, but after a few quick Google or LinkedIn searches, you'd probably have many very plausible ways that you could find outsiders to help you do this.
Matt, you mentioned internal audit, and that was also a discussion point in your blog post. Let's turn to the role of internal audit, a compliance risk assessment versus an enterprise risk assessment, the interplay between the two, and that entire discussion that you highlighted in your blog post.
Yeah, we talked a fair bit about that on this webinar, and I think there's a couple of very easy ways that internal audit can help. Most clearly, and I think simply, is that they can help with testing internal controls, because this is what they do. This is their day job, is that they look at the design of internal controls, they test the internal controls, they recommend remediations. So ultimately, if your compliance risk assessment involves testing compliance controls to see whether they work as intended, maybe you could do that as a compliance function. But let's be honest that most compliance officers come from a legal background, so you are not well-versed in the fine art of actually testing data controls, internal controls, and internal audit is. So you could ask them to do the testing for you. Under certain circumstances, if you don't have an internal audit team, you might be able to find some others who could also help you with testing. I'm thinking primarily of the IT department. Might be able to help you with testing, say, data access controls or privacy controls. They could do it. They probably do that work from time to time. But all of this assumes that you have a good working relationship with either internal audit or IT or potentially some other function. In financial services, for example, I know a lot of the first line business units, they do their own testing, and maybe they could share that work with you. I don't know if you're in financial services, how often you could get the first line to do testing that you want them to do versus they'll share the testing that they do themselves. But there are various ways to get help with testing. And I think unless a compliance team is very well versed in testing, or you are very good at specifically testing the compliance functions controls, and maybe you are, you could do that. But most of the time, you want to get somebody else to do the testing. An internal audit would be the best candidate. Then, Tom, the other thing that we talked about was internal audit, which we should remember that they already have their own plans for risk assessments. They do enterprise risk assessments. So ideally, once a year, they will perform an annual enterprise risk assessment, looking at all the risks, and then pick out which ones seem most pressing to them. And the question I have encountered before is whether you would want to subsume your compliance risk assessment into that larger enterprise risk assessment and basically have internal audit do it for you, the whole thing. In theory, you could, but let's think this through, that internal audit would see compliance risks as one thing among many other risks that they are assessing and wondering about. So it is just one part of the larger whole, whereas if you, the compliance team, do the risk assessment yourself for compliance risks, that's the whole. And you get to care for your baby as much as possible versus putting it into daycare, which, look, daycare centers are great, but then your baby is one among numerous babies that are getting care. So what do you really want to do there? And then, you know, it gets to, does internal audit know how to do a compliance risk assessment the way that you would like, with the priorities that you would like? Maybe they think there's a much more pressing risk and they'll assess that first. So you'd have to think that through. On the other hand, you don't want to exasperate the rest of the business by having duplicative risk assessments. Here comes internal audit this quarter and then compliance next quarter. And there's the business units are thinking, how often do I have to respond to all this? So could you coordinate your risk assessments together? Are there parts of the compliance risk assessment, such as gathering data as opposed to conducting interviews, that maybe internal audit could do for you to keep it simple? Possibly. That sounds very good to me. I don't necessarily know about doing actual interviews of in person. I think that's something most compliance officers would probably want to do themselves. But you know, the bottom line is, how well do you work with your internal audit function? And if the answer isn't fabulously, hand in glove, you know, cousins who are joined at the hip, we love working together. If that's not the answer, work on that first, because compliance and internal audit need to have an excellent working relationship, period. Once you do, then you can figure out who would like to do what and what makes sense. And then things will get much easier for the rest of the business. And we have to remember that's the objective here. If the risk assessments are a burden to the rest of the business, they will only give you the least possible information to make you go away. That's not helpful. You want them to participate in the risk assessment. So how can you make it easy for them? That's really one of the big questions you have to think about.
Matt, one of the, if not criticisms, critiques of internal audit I have heard over the years that you, as you don't want internal audit testing the effectiveness of your compliance program, you may want them to test the effectiveness of your internal controls. Did that issue work its way up at all?
I mean, it worked more, I think, in piecemeal, and it's a fair criticism. I would say that, yes, internal audit is best suited to test controls. Like I mentioned earlier, this is literally their job. They pick an area of the company that they think there's a risk here. They assess it. They test the controls. Are the controls designed appropriately? What recommendations would we give? Internal audit does that all the time. As to assessing more of what I'll call the softer controls, such as assessing the culture of compliance at the company, that is something that strikes me as more the compliance officer would want to keep a very close grip on that and do that yourself as much as possible. And then if internal audit showed up and said, we want to do a separate culture risk assessment, I mean, they could. I don't necessarily know that you could stop them. I don't know that you'd want to have a fight about that. But I don't think that it would be the most productive way to have a strong ethical culture. The most productive way would be that the compliance team assesses that sort of thing with guidance and input and advice from internal audit that you might want to solicit. And whatever advice they give you is probably going to be worth listening to. But I don't necessarily know that you'd want to turn that over to them wholesale, that they are there to assess corporate culture and you don't do it. That seems very foolhardy or penny-wise, pound-foolish.
Matt, it seems that there are multiple variables that a compliance professional would need to evaluate to determine how to begin. Did you have any guidance on someone who's thinking about this process, who they might talk to? Should they reach out to their peers? In addition, of course, to reading your blog, any other resources that you can think of they might access to try to figure out the best method for their organization?
Well, there are plenty of resources out there. Certainly, you could reach out to your peers. And in fact, just the other week, I saw on the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics, they run a online discussion forum. Somebody was asking about that. And they also asked about who externally could get an assessment of my compliance program if I wanted to assess my own program. And there are various ways to get that advice. There's various ways to find it. I think that you certainly could look to SCCE and its publications. You could probably just Google, how do I perform a compliance risk assessment? You're going to find a lot of different professional services firms out there that they do it for a fee, but then they also write about it. It's more of an abstract, here are best practices that we would recommend for any compliance risk assessment to be done well. So there are plenty of ways to think that through. Tom, the only other point I wanted to stress is that we should remember, we, for the last 20 minutes or so, you and I have talked mostly about how to perform a risk assessment, but the company also needs an ability to perform many risk assessments on many different subjects to a high level of rigor. That is especially true in highly regulated industries like financial services, where they specifically expect to see a framework for risk assessments so that you can assess cybersecurity risk, liquidity risk, compliance risk, vendor risk, all of it to the same high level. And the financial regulators themselves have put out advice on that from time to time, or guidance of what they expect to see. But that's another big point that compliance officers would want to think through. That is one where you probably would want to sit down with internal audit or an external consultant of some kind. How do we build a process for risk X, which suddenly seems to be urgent in my field? How would I go through and assess that with the same level of rigor as internal hotline risks, which we've already assessed probably 100 times over the last however many years? And you know how to do that. But how would you figure out who do I talk to? What data do I collect? What testing do we do? How much do we do of each of those things? And why does it make sense for this risk, but not another one where we do it to a different priority? You know, how do we understand what is the right level to do? That's something else you're going to have to think through. I know I'm getting a bit meta here, but keep that in mind, that there is a larger frame you need to see. And that is one where you'd want to talk with, like I said, internal audit, any external provider of advice out there, whether it's an audit firm or a compliance advisory firm, there's plenty of them who could help you see the bigger picture to assure that you know how to knock these risk assessments down one risk after the other.
For our audience, we are going to completely switch subjects now, because yesterday Matt and I experienced one of the, for me, one of the most magical, mystical events I've ever seen, which was the total eclipse of the sun. Now, there is no dark side of the moon. It's all dark, really. As the eclipse moved across the United States, Matt and I viewed it in very different parts of the country, but we did both get to view it. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you to tell us about your journey to the area of totality, and then what did you and your guests experience?
Well, yeah, you know, Tom, I scratched my head about how could we figure out a connection between compliance and a solar eclipse. I couldn't come up with one, but screw it. It was still a fascinating sight to see, so we can just talk about it. So I live in Boston. We had to drive about 4.5 hours with traffic, which was not that bad, up north to St. Johnsbury, Vermont, where we had crystal clear skies to be able to see the eclipse. I went with my two kids and one of their best friends. So it was me and three other people under the age of 10 who were suitably awed by the eclipse. We basically just pulled over on the side of a state highway in Vermont, right outside of St. John's, and looked up, and it provided a amazing sight. And I think the next one is that's coming, I will already be collecting Medicare and Social Security by the time that this next solar eclipse rolls around in the U.S. So I was delighted that we were able to go and see it. What about you?
So I was on the path of totality. Literally, it went over my house. We, however, did not have a gloriously sunshine day. We had partly cloudy to very cloudy. But starting at 12:30, we got to see the moon cut across the sun, moving towards 4 minutes of totality. I moved from inside my house to my back patio, set up chairs with my wife. A local radio station had a solar eclipse set list playing. So we cranked up the tunes and we watched the moon magically traverse across the sun with the glasses on that we had and with the cloud cover. It was like a great old black and white horror movie, just to see the clouds roll across. As we move towards totality, and we did get to totality of the 4 minutes plus, we had about a minute and a half to a minute 45 seconds of totality before cloud cover blocked the sun. But we did get to see the corona. We did get to see a red dot at the bottom of the sun. I got to see two crosses. And we saw a diamond at the end. So it was as spectacular as advertised. Everyone I've talked to, I did a separate podcast on the eclipse. So I talked to a lot of eclipse chasers. I talked to NASA professionals. I talked to amateur astronomers. And everything everyone said was absolutely right. The next one is scheduled in the United States, I think, for 2044, maybe 46. So it'll be a while again. I'm probably not going to join the eclipse chaser class and go to Spain for the next one. But I would just say, if you ever have the chance to experience one, take it. It is, it's almost indescribable to see that. And it really was a magical experience.
Absolutely.
All right, Matt, I'm not sure we can top this next week, but I can't wait to see what next week brings us.
Thank you, Tom.
This is Tom Fox again. As I mentioned at the start of this podcast, our sponsor for the Compliance Podcast Network this month is Ethico. Have you ever struggled with the ROI of your compliance program? Have you struggled with how to present your compliance program budget request to your chief financial officer? Well, I paired with Ethico to help you in both of those. Ethico has created an ROI compliance calculator, and I've written a white paper on the ROI of compliance. You can get those by going to the website listed on the show notes. I hope you will check it out. I hope you will use it, and I hope you let us know whether it helped you or not.
I'd like to tell you about the latest edition of the Compliance Podcast Network, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 3 to 5 minutes, I give you a quick compliance tip that you can use to integrate, upgrade, and enhance your compliance program. Check it out on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.